between Mike McCauley and Gene Shields, August 15, 1974. Mike, you had a very active part in the unemployed struggle. Would you like to tell us when and a little bit about how? How did you find relief camps?
Oh, they're what everybody reads about. They were pretty rugged, and there were no cure for unemployment. I started in Pender Harbor in January of 32. I'm just trying to... You got an hourly rate. Now, I'm not too sure. It was 25 cents an hour or something like that, roughly, and you bought your own clothes. And, come on now, Emma. Mm-hmm. We went up there for the winter, and that's where I run into, met Jack Ogman with that family. He's an unemployed miner. And, come March, when the weather was breaking and was getting too good to be cooked up in one of them places, you were on your own. You got back to Vancouver the best way you could. Some of the boys never saved money. There was, I don't know if you ever run into, I run into another name, Cropston of mine, was Blondie Corston. But Blondie and a few more, they built their own canoes up there out of logs, and that's how they come back to get out of the relief camps and back to Vancouver. They made similar to what do you call the Hawaiian ones?
Oh, the outriggers.
Outriggers, yeah. And that's how Blondie and half a dozen more got back to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And we come back and we come back by boat.
No.
Jack and I, and as the unemployed question in Vancouver was pretty great that day. I can think now. A group of us, about 20 or 25, we started. We started to travel around as a gang, as a group, going every place all over the provinces, and offering our services.
Okay, you came into Vancouver in 32. What was there for the unemployed in Vancouver?
Nothing in them days. It was, there was no relief of any kind. And unless, if I'm not mistaken, you had to be, you either had to be married, and I forget what the rating the single people were given, but if you hadn't been in the province for a certain length of time, you weren't qualified, so most of us were forced to ride the rods out, which we did. And this group, as I mentioned, been thrown in contact with one another and riding the freights into different division points like Kamloops and these places where everybody took to the woods, and when they seen the cop, they made up their minds, the hell with this, if we're going to be pinched, let's all be pinched at once. And we, as a gang, we traveled all around. We went up to Red Pass, into Prince George. And I can always, I think I told her about this, I can always remember Prince George in 32. The only cafe in town was called the Soviet Cafe.
Well, that would have tickled some of the boys.
That's right. From there on, we went up to Prince Rupert. And it's a funny instance of Prince Rupert, the agent, the provincial agent, representing the government, and they used to issue 28 days relief in scrip, which was cashable at this man's brother's store, and you took it out in goods, and this is the way the relief was handled.
Isn't that handy? You're real cozy.
And,
figures, isn't it?
Yeah.
This was, I'm saying, the middle of summer, 32, and then we come back down with the hopes, with our hopes, most of us, with an idea of trying to make a few dollars, because what they say about the unemployed, you've got to agree with me, in the 30s, still most of them people are willing to turn a hand to make an odd dollar or something, and the public as a whole was safe with them.
Yes, that comes out when we get into discipline and the kind of men that they were, that it isn't equivalent perhaps today, but these men did want work and wages.
That's right.
And there's no doubt about it. And they wanted a chance to live in cities, to get married and bring up families. And, you know, when I talk to some of the trekkers, there are some who never have been married, and perhaps what they did in their early life that taught them just to wander, to never have any roots, is probably why they haven't married.
It could be. But anyway, I was going to say, we went down to, at the time of the year, August or whatever it is, when we all as a group figured we could go down the Okanagan and make a few dollars down there. The first instance of a little fun, I might say, was we landed in Vernon, and it was Labor Day. So, as I said, we didn't want to bother the public, so we wanted we wanted to find the chief of police and ask him for relief. So we inquired around, we found out he was at the fairgrounds. So we went down and got him. And the guy's, and I can remember this, the guy's name was Clark. And he rode up to me on a horse. And I said, "Are you the chief, Mr. Clark?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, I wasn't doing all the talking, somebody else was too, but I said, well, we're here and we'd like some relief, some meals, and a bed." And I said, "If the jail is the bed, it's all right by us." So he says, "You're the damned Irishman, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, he says, "I am too." I knew the name. And I said, "What party are you from?" He says, "I'm from the good party." He says, "I'm from the north." Well, I says, "I guess I'm a son of a view." He says, "I come from the south." But anyway, he threatened us and all this. But anyway, as a result, we fell in behind him, and he rode his horse up to the municipal hall, and he called some councilman or whatever was necessary, and the guy opened the office or whatever the case may be, and then the script was given us for 2 days, and we were told to sleep in there, which after the second day, we moved on. We landed down in Kelowna, and we went out to visit farmers. And another guy and I, we got a job picking apples, 3 cents a box. And the little cabin we were living in was about 8 feet square, and there wasn't nothing. Not even a tin or a pan or nothing. And we come prepared, we're on the road, so we had enough facilities, a frying pan and a couple of tobacco cans, so we could do our own cooking. But it seemed to rain every second day, and this 3 cents a box. I think I owed more money for groceries than I got from that farmer. But these were the situations that I remember in the 30s. And I went over to, not making anything in the Okanagan, I went over to Princeton, my first initiation in that town, and I hired out an extra gang, and went up to Coquihalla to work there. And most of us did the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we got in a couple of months' work, so there was no, you can't blame it. I think the weather conditions and everything closed it down, and we head back to Vancouver. And up to, I got a pinpoint that, the east of an anchor, where the relief office used to be, Homer Street.
Homer Street, yeah.
And he went up there, and we managed to talk the clerk there. The funny part of this, I must tell you a story. The guy that we battled all these years in that Homer Street, Hamilton Street, I'm wrong, Hamilton.
Right across from the old Sun Building,
yeah.
that was a Legion for a while,
yeah.
After. I don't know if it's still there or not.
Hamilton. But anyway, this guy we battled, and everybody was cursed and swore at all the unemployed over the hungry 30s. When I signed up at Little Mountain in 1941, the sergeant major there.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Weren't you a little furious? No. Rank
I told him that, but I told him years before. He had no authority over us because we were on the draft going to overseas. He was just a home guard stationed there, but that's where he was. He was a tough-belly guy. I always remember. But anyway, I was going to say, after we managed to get by, I say we, four or five, was Ogwin and I and a couple other fellas, get by Christmas between a little bit of relief and a little bit of money we had, and then we applied again for the relief camps, which back again to Pender Harbor. And well, they were trying to build a highway. I think they eventually got finished about 20 years later between Half Moon Bay and Pender Harbor, and this was they had must have had 300 men there with picks and shovels trying to build this highway.
Through the mountain area.
Yeah.
And rock.
Well, you don't mind me going into instances.
No, that's what I want.
It was an oddball. I was given the job of driving a cat. Still for, I think it was 25 cents. And I was just young and felt like an easy man, a lazy man's way of looking at it. I drove this cat for 6 hours or whatever it is we worked. But every morning I used to come out that. I'd fill the gas tank at 4 o'clock, and the next morning I'd come out, the gas tank would be empty. So I said to the little boss one day, I said, what gives it here? Oh, he says, forget it. Okay. Well, for me, I said, as long as we got gas, we'll fill it up. But I said, it's just an idea that makes me think I'm going nuts. I'm filling this tank at 4 o'clock every night, and I come out at 8 in the morning, there's nothing in it. So he turns to me and he says, see that little island over there? He says, there's a fisherman out there, he says, and he can't afford gas. He goes fishing every morning. He's got a nice wife. Now he says, if you want to go down there at noon hour, he says, that'll make up for the gas. These are facts, you know.
Oh, Lord. I believe it. You know, they sound far-fetched, but the boys keep telling me different incidents that they have to be true.
But up there was, as you said, this was under the jurisdiction of the province, and things weren't too bad. It was the food was reasonable, and outside of the principle of working for nothing, you might say, it wasn't too bad. But then,
put a plate. Mm-hmm.
Then we left. I left there. I should say. I guess that's right. Yeah, Jack was with me, but anyway, I'll leave it to me for I, for the time being. We left there, and I left there and come out in about April again when the good weather hit us. And this would be April 33. And Bennett was elected 32. The changeover in the camps, military control went over in 1933. And as I shipped to one of the camps at Duck Creek, this side of Midway. Must have been fall, a little later than this, because the evenings were cold. We went in there, and this camp was run by, I guess, a permanent force major, you'd call him nowadays, a permanent force. And we were sleeping in bell tents, the men, that was our accommodations. But they had one building, and it was for the cookhouse. Even the major had a tent. But this cookhouse, you never seen anything like it before. I mean, the Okanagan's not that warm. There were screens on the window, all right, but there wasn't a damn pane of glass in them. When I landed in there, there was a lot of grumbling going on about different things. The first thing I heard brought up was Sally, who was with me, Scotty Armour. I don't know if you run into Scotty yet.
I've heard the name.
Yeah.
I haven't been
he's
able to find
someplace.
Him. Is he?
Yeah.
Good.
So we listened to these guys and he was in, and they were all for taking this cook out and throwing him in the creek because everything was wrong, the bread was no good and the baking, everything was cold. So I remember I said to some of these guys, I said, this is not the cook's fault, this is something you've got to do something about. So I, myself and two or three other guys, we agreed we'd go up and see this major. And he threatened me with everything under the sun before I even said a word to him. He was on a call for the, he went Mounties that day, he had the prevention, and a guy named McDonald was the head of the provincial force in the Nelson area, and he was noted as being a son of a bee, and your dad had told you that before, too. But anyway, we got a hold of this major, I can't think of his name, and we said we weren't there to do anything to him, but we thought that he, in his position, and through whatever communications he had, he should get this building that was supposed to be a cookhouse fixed up, because otherwise he was going to have a lot of trouble. So there was nothing said right then, and we didn't get any answer. But while we're having lunch at noon, I turn around and here's two police cars driving up, McDonald in the first one. And he beckoned at me and he said, are you McCauley? And I said, sure. Like, you've met me before. I said, you don't have to ask me. Well, what the hell is all this going on? All this? And I said, now listen, I said, are you going to take me in or not? No, but he said, the major phone just had to come up. He says, you guys come up from Vancouver, and he says, you caused some disturbance and all this. I said, I was up to see the major with two or three other guys this morning. And I said, all we asked him was to do something about the cookhouse, such as putting on, either put more lighting in it and close it up if he can't afford glass, or put glass in the windows, because the, all the complaints in here, I said, is regards to the output of this cookhouse. And the cook is impossible for him to bake or do any cooking under these conditions. And believe it or not, this damn provincial chief inspector he was in Rankwell, he went up to see the major, and I never heard the words that they said, but he come back and all he said was me, if this happens again, he says, I'm taking you to Nelson. And I said, well, I'm not going to run away on you. But by golly, they got somebody in the next day, and that cookhouse was fixed up.
Was that the only battle you ever won?
No.
From what I hear, he put up quite a few.
But it's like other things, though. You know, you think of these things, and I guess maybe we had a couple of years experience, but most people think if something like that goes wrong, the cook's to blame, and as a result, the cook was taking the punishment for actually the overseers of these camps. And there was lots of cases where they weren't to blame. I was in a camp one time where I could have killed a cook. I don't know if you run into Moans. He was active in a way. Well, this was at Hope, and believe it or not, it was on the Coca-Cola. We went in there one time, Ogburn and I. We were there about a week. And it wasn't too bad, but I mean, as camps go, none of them were good. But I'll be damned one day if that guy didn't give us a tapioca pie. And this was the cook, and he was a friend of ours.
Did he have anything else?
I grabbed him by the back of the neck, and I grabbed that pie, and I put it in his face. I couldn't have it. We come home, when we used to come home, we used to go visit his wife, but the guy was crazy. There was no reason in the world for that. But that's one time I had to run. Jack and I both run. The cops went up the highway and we went up the hill.
What was his excuse? Why would he give you that?
I don't know. I thought he was crazy. He was a seaman, too, and if he was working.
I don't think I've ever even seen a recipe for tapioca pie.
Oh, it was, well, if you ever run a dog, then he's before.
Why bother putting pastry on it? The only thing I ever used it for was thickening something.
Yeah. Well, I'm in to do that. Well, at that time we become acquainted with different people in the unemployed movement, including Slim Evans and Bob Lelis, George Drayton, and all the other ones who were active in the unemployed workers movement at that time. It was during that time that we heard about Slim Evans being kidnapped by the Ku Klux Klan up at Princeton. I'm trying to think, I used to know some of them games. Some of the names of them often didn't matter if the two I met them after.
There's a couple of businessmen, a couple of
the guy that had the big store.
Yeah.
Miller was one of them. The guy had the big store, he was one of them.
Yeah.
And Miller was one of them. Bulldog Miller.
The cop.
Yeah.
Provincial police.
Provincial police in MDJ.
Yeah.
And later on we went down to Vernon in the summer when Slim was tried at the Vernon Assizes. And there must have been thousands of us down there. Was there an employee?
I think there was.
They come from all over.
As I remember, there were a great many people, but I was pretty young then. And
yeah,
my memory
there
is there were just hundreds and hundreds around because they felt it was a pretty sad charge.
And he was handed a 2-year sentence. I can't remember the year. Manson? As you can see here.
I think it is Manson.
I think he was the judge. And he was well known. He was one of the guys who had a record, or a reputation, I should say, be handing out 2 years, 5 years. I'll meet you at 3 o'clock. We'll have a game of golf. 6 years. This is where he used to carry on his court.
Oh.
He was as close to a hanging judge as you could find was old Manson. He used to be on the provincial court. But anyway, as I said, we were at the trial at Slim's at Vernon. And later on, in 33, I had occasion to go up in this hotbed of would-be anti-unionism, Princeton area, where
do you want to drink that?
Murray, he was one of the heads. He run that area. He run the KKKs of anybody. He was the manager at, not Salamine.
You know, people are going to find it very hard to believe that we had Ku Klux Klan burning crosses on hills.
That's
and
right.
Kidnapping people, don't you?
Yeah.
Just
Blakeburn.
40 years ago.
He was the manager of Blakeburn.
That's right.
And they also run the clique down at Princeton. I went up there to help out with the mine workers organization, plus whatever unemployed help I could do. I was up there for about, I must have been up there about 3 months. And a lot of the miners in that area were foreign born, and as a result, they were not so apt to speak out as an English speaking person would, because everything was against them. They could very likely be deported, or they could hold. They would have trouble if they were entangled up with the law. But while I was there, arrangements were made for a meeting. And this meeting was one thing, was to give a report of Slim's trial at
Vernon,
yes. Because somewhere along the way it was arranged that Harold Winch, who later